Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the August edition of Aviation Safety Magazine's audio podcasting. I'm Jeb Burnside. I'm editor-in-chief of Aviation Safety Magazine. Welcome to the latest in a continuing series of podcasts associated with the magazine content here on the avweb.com site. With me today is Dan Johnson of the Light Aircraft Manufacturers Association. Dan goes way back into not only the hang gliding and ultralight community, but is one of those people who is commonly thought of as being there at the beginning. Dan, welcome.
Well, thank you, I think. I got the feeling I was about as old as most of there, but thank you kindly for that generous introduction. At the very least, I've had a front row seat for
right.
all of it.
Right.
And it's been a fascinating thing to watch. And even Phil Boyer of AOPA at an introduction to a talk I gave said, it's got to be one of the most interesting things you can do, give birth to a whole new segment of aviation. Well, of course, there's me and many other midwives, if you will, but... yeah, it is. It is pretty cool. You know, I've been in the GA world most of my life, too, and this is neat to be here on the ground. But when you're on the ground floor or something, there is all kinds of confusion. There's starvation for information, and I've been able to supply some of that. So that's been one of the main roles I've done besides some promotional work. And I wear a bunch of different hats. It's kind of necessary in the world I've seen to move in.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a real lucky guy. But there's a lot of people that go, wow, is the certification any good? Is this pilot license at 20 hours any good? And touching on the subject of your article, is the whole maintenance thing any good? And
right.
by the way, why did they flip-flop all the terms? Category, class, repairman, maintenance and inspection. You know, why did they do all that?
Mm-hmm.
Well... it's a whole new rule. What were they supposed to do? If they called everything the thing, same thing it was, which would introduce no apparent confusion, you'd have to separate it with some other words anyway. I mean, you know, it's a rock and a hard spot. How do you do something new and yet not have it sound new?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
don't you want it to sound new?
Well, and don't you want it to sound different and special and try to reflect, if you will, the some of the underlying thought behind the sport pilot rule and light sport aircraft generally. Yeah, that makes sense. Let me stop and ask you, though, to describe a little bit more about one of the hats you do wear, and that is your participation in the Light Aircraft Manufacturers Association.
Yes, that, which abbreviated LAMA or LAMA, depending on how you want to say it, is kind of like GAMA,
mm-hmm.
the guys who are the General Aviation Manufacturers Association. Now, that's an older, quite well-funded, highly experienced group, and, you know, they do a lot of stuff right, but they don't choose to come down and do LSA.
They're, right.
One of their mandates is conventionally certified aircraft. We aren't those. So... LAMA, which came along in the end of the hang gliding period and through the whole ultralight period, naturally went to LSA when they came on the scene and has become the industry trade group representing the light sport aircraft industry. It says manufacturers in the name, but it's really all the business
mm-hmm.
because we welcome a flight school
okay.
or an airport manager or a financing operation as well as someone building airframes or engines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Although the airframe and engine guys are the heart of the organization
mm-hmm.
and why all the other ones need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But LAMA is composed of about 120 members, so actually we're about twice the size of GAMA in membership,
right.
although a fraction of their size in funding. And we're going to try and change that a little bit. But you know, we're the guys with the lower price to everything, so there's less money to work with. And yet we can do some pretty creative stuff in kind of the way EAA does in the sense that we use volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
We use fee-based things so that everybody doesn't have to pay for what benefits a small group or something like that kind of thing. And we're coming along pretty well. We just sent our president to work for FAA.
Oh, good.
We didn't send him, of course. That's a presumptuous statement. But the fact that the former president of LAMA is now going to be working with the small airplane directorate directly involved with LSA is just a wonderful thing.
Oh,
and
that's
we want
great.
To welcome
yeah.
Tom Gunnarsson to that role and thank him for his previous role at LAMA.
Mm-hmm.
But now we are looking for a new president, and meanwhile we have taken on a new board member, and that is Earl Lawrence of EAA, who deals with their government matters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and we've also got some other notables, including Jack Pelton, the CEO of Cessna,
mm-hmm.
and several other good names, which I should at least mention since I've said one, and that it would be Dave Martin,
right.
Phil Lockwood, Tom Pagini, Joe Conrad, our Lama Europe man,
mm-hmm.
and, of course, Larry Burke, who founded the organization and remains as a counselor to us.
Does your role at Lama have a title?
I am chairman of the board.
Ah, okay.
Those people I just mentioned comprise our board.
Okay.
And so that's my current role. And I also have a separate agreement with the organization to assist it with marketing, which is the other hat I wear.
Mm-hmm.
I help the entire industry with various sure. marketing efforts.
Sure. Well, in a nutshell, going back to the question of light support aircraft and how they're maintained, in a nutshell, how does this break down? How does this differ, maintenance requirements, I should say, differ from those the FAA imposes on certificated aircraft?
Well, the simplest way to describe it is that currently in the world of Part 23 certified airplanes, and that means newly certified airplanes like the whole Cirrus line,
right.
it does not include some that have had certification for decades.
Mm-hmm.
But anything new has to go through that certification. It's all government-run. Of course, the industry has great contribution to it, but it's a government program. As with most of, not the pilot side. Sport pilot is still a government-run thing, but the LSA side, the airplane side, is now operating under something we call industry consensus standards,
mm-hmm.
meaning that industry gets together, devises standards, and after FAA's review of them, and they participate in their writing all the way through, although just as a single member, not as a dominant force, then they are approved, and then that is how airplanes are certified. And there are people that have attacked that as not being a good system, but I think if everyone takes a deep breath and gives it a little time, they'll see that it's quite a remarkable system and that the standards are not less or less stringent.
Right.
They are fully up to what they need to be for these airplanes, but they can also improve on a rapid basis. These standards can be changed in 30 days if necessary. That's unheard of in government action.
Mm-hmm.
Involved with all of that, the manufacturer is given tremendous authority to declare his compliance in the first place, but also to state, here's how you'll maintain my airplane. It's all up to the manufacturer. He designates who can do it. He designates what they can do and pretty much how they can do it. And some of them can then say, well, Mr. A&P, you can do anything you want to this airplane. And another one might say, well, Mr. A&P, you can do this, this, and this, and that's it. Anything else comes back to the factory,
mm-hmm.
up to the manufacturer. That's another sea change difference. As part of that, there are two new distinctions that individuals can go achieve.
Mm-hmm.
An A&P or somebody who's just probably got decent mechanical aptitude, because those of us that shouldn't get too near wrenches probably won't go get these approvals anyway. But so, you know, an A&P who wants to start working on LSA now, first of all, he can do a lot of it right away anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the manufacturer says he can do a lot of it, he's certainly empowered to. But there is some individual learning that you can do about, we use some different power plants, for example. The Rotax engine is dominant in the light sport aircraft community, and that's
mm-hmm.
not well known to American A&Ps.
Mm-hmm.
So an A&P would be prudent to go get some training on it, and it's available. Of course, everything comes with a price, and so does this. But
right.
It is definitely available. There are more than one organization that can provide that, and it has been done and is being done. However, an individual with good aptitude can also go take that same course and can also work on that engine if, of course, the manufacturer specifies, and for the most part, they do. In addition, an individual can obtain, I mean, just an owner now, can obtain what's called an inspection authorization. That sounds like a high level of approval to GA people because it is there.
Right, right.
In LSA, it's the low end. It's
mm-hmm.
where you come in and it allows you to do your annual condition inspection on your own airplane if it meets certain categories. You're not allowed to do it if it's used in a commercial environment. You
mm-hmm.
are allowed to do it if it's a individual owned airplane called an ELSA. And those, there is some ability to move back and forth in those with the manufacturer's input. Manufacturer has a lot of say in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And many people, when you look at it carefully, you realize, well, that's the way it should be. That guy's not any good at doing that or that organization. It's going to catch up to him real quick.
That's right.
And FAA ultimately has all the power they need to go, if you will, make it right.
Mm-hmm.
But if the manufacturer can also be nimble and go, hey, there's a better engine. We're using that. We need some new people to get trained. Here's how it works. And so we can rapidly go with changes that are happening rapidly in our world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, the main one that as somebody who's paying attention to maintenance and really wants to get into it, they'll want to go get what's abbreviated as LSRM.
Mm-hmm.
And that's spelled out in the article that Dave Higdon wrote for Aviation Safety, and it means Light Sport Repairman Maintenance. You can put a dash in there if you want to make it clearer. And the other one is LSRI, which is Light Sport Repairman Inspection. That's the one we just talked about. It's the lower level, 16-hour, basically weekend course. You get quite a bit of training in it. You get pretty smart about how to do what you're allowed to do, and then you can go do that and maybe save yourself a few hundred dollars per year.
Is there a distinction, and if so, where is the line drawn between the lower-end ability to inspect versus the upper-end ability to maintain? How is that distinguished?
Well, you know, pilots are, I think the best way to describe it is put it in what I would call GA terms, which means that everybody who owns an airplane knows you got to go get an annual condition inspection
right.
done. You can't do it. You have to pay somebody to do it. And that, when I owned a couple of Cessnas, that would cost me, the come-on price is $375. That's to do the basic inspection.
Right.
Then there's always something that needs to be done. So on whole, those would typically run me $1,500 a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for a small airplane. Now, if the airplane is an ELSA, experimental light sport aircraft, and that means it is a kit, but that, you know, that could mean applying some decals.
Mm-hmm.
It might be the same animal, and you put on the placards according to some sheet that you get with it, and now you've done some work, and they can call it an ELSA. An ELSA can only be built after a manufacturer has made an SLSA. An SLSA is special, and that means special light sport aircraft, and that means that it can be used commercially for rental, for flight instruction, or for leaseback, which is an exception to earlier rules governing this kind of airplane. It does allow for hire operations. Those have higher requirements, as you might expect. 100-hour, and an individual can't do the annual condition inspection. But on an ELSA, they can't. So that can save them some money, and it's a pretty good thing to have in your pocket, because it'll save you from having to take so much out of your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
The maintenance side, this is an individual, first of all, can go do this, too. Now, you want to work on your own SLSA? Well, then go get the proper credential for it. In the A&P world, as I understand it, that's 2,400 hours of instruction.
Right.
And you'd be hard-pressed to do that in less than 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Could I, as
in the LSA world, it's only 120 hours of instruction, and then with a second add-on modular-type course, and that kind of modularization is common to this new rule, too, will an additional 40 hours, so 160 total, will allow you to go work on an SLSA.
I guess I'm one of the questions I have, I own an airplane. It's a certificated airplane. And under Part 43, of course, I can go do certain things. I can change the oil. I can change and clean the spark plugs. I can change the brake pads, change a tire, things of this sort. Is there a similar exemption, for lack of a better word, associated with a light sport aircraft?
Again, it's up to the manufacturer
as to
what you can do once you've taken that annual condition inspection. And some things, just like you can change the spark plugs in your Part 23 airplane.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that in an LSA, too.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So most of that stuff is kind of parroted. And, in fact, when people say, oh, the certification system's no good, well, gee, I mean, if you compared it line for line with what the government requires Cirrus or Diamond or somebody else new to do, you'd go, oh, this is virtually the same thing. In fact, it's almost the same language.
Right.
And it is, except that one didn't have the government authors writing it. That's about it. Same is true here in the maintenance side. And so, you know, if you're willing to invest, and now beyond that, you know, changing the spark plugs and the oil filter and some stuff like that, which frankly most people I know don't even do that.
Yeah.
But those that want to do more, well, if you want to invest 4 weeks of your life in it, you could be doing everything that an A&P can be doing to your airplane.
How much?
If you don't think that would save you some money, you're wrong.
Yeah.
And if you've got the aptitude, maybe that's worthwhile to you.
Mm-hmm. How much would it cost for those 4 weeks on average?
Well, I think, I don't know. I haven't priced those, but I believe we're in the neighborhood of about $5,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To get the, and that would get you the LSR-M, or mm-hmm. maintenance, the level where you can work on an SLSA, even if it's used in a flight school kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So about $5,000 for that. And then there are specific, you know, there are all different airplanes. There are all different ways and whatnot. So if you know one, you don't necessarily know the other. So there are airframe classes. And those are available, I think, for most of the major brands anyway, and they're coming for everybody, but it, you know, we're building a lot of infrastructure. You can't do everything at once. But for those that are ready, it's typically another week, another 40 hours, and that probably costs you another $1,000 or something like that. So for about $6,000 invested, you could then do all your own maintenance. In fact, if you wanted to hire out, you could do other people's too, but you could do all your own maintenance, I mean, at any level the manufacturer allows. And in, I don't know, 5 years of ownership, you probably easily pay for that.
Yeah,
and $6,000 investment plus whatever satisfaction you get out of being that person.
With that LSRM certification, of course, you could work on other aircraft of the same type, could you not?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So imagine the scenario where you've got a flying club, whether that's a partnership or a full-blown club, four people that is, or six or whatever, or 30. An organization of either size could have one of their guys be that person.
Mm-hmm.
And usually that's the way they work out anyway. Somebody's more mechanically able, and he says, well, I'll do the maintenance stuff. You pay the bill. And, you know, that's, and you hope each one does the other. Does their job right, of course.
Exactly.
That's a challenge of partnerships, but that's a challenge in running a business, too. So it's really no different, I think. But, you know, then one guy gets the LSRM status, and he says, I'll just do the maintenance. We don't have to go hire an E&P at $50 an hour. I'll do it.
Let's say I'm an A&P with IA, with inspection authorization, and I want to go work on a light sport aircraft, let's say a CT or something like that. Now, I can already work on an Aronca Champ. I can already work on a J3 Cub, both of which fit into the light sport aircraft category but are not technically certificated as LSAs. If I wanted to go work flight design CT, would I need additional certification?
Yes, because that manufacturer wants mm-hmm. you to have it.
Uh-huh.
We go back to the manufacturer again. Somebody who's making a metal airplane powered by a Continental might say, hey, if you got an A&P, you can do everything you want on
mm-hmm.
this airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my maintenance manual, by the way. They all have to have one of those, and here's
right.
how you do stuff. So it's conceivable that that can work well. Flight Design and most other good organizations are going to go, well, look, you know, have you ever worked with carbon fiber before? And if the guy says no, well,
mm-hmm.
nobody should even have to tell him that that wouldn't be prudent.
Right.
And so the classes are there. You go learn how to work on carbon fiber. Now you know how to do carbon fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn how to work on a Rotax, which has a gear drive and liquid cooling and things that may not have been in your prior experience. So it's kind of like the time and type for a pilot. A flight instructor can go teach in a CFI, a conventional flight instructor, can go teach in any LSA after acquiring 5 hours time and type.
Mm-hmm.
Well, does he know how to already fly? Of course. You know, he's got all the credentials. He's probably a great instructor, or one would hope. But does he know how to fly this particular flight design CT? Well, shouldn't he learn some things before he goes out and tries to teach in it? Seems to me it just makes sense. That's not required of a CFI who, with only Cessna time, gets an opportunity to teach in Pipers. He mm-hmm. just hops in it and goes.
That's right. Okay.
Now, maybe not for his insurance requirements, but for the license he's got, he is not restricted. Here, we actually have more restriction, but it's easy to get.
Yeah.
It's not a bad system.
Yeah.
But it's going to take everybody, including those of us who are supposedly the experts, more time to really get it all down. And meanwhile, I think aviation safety, this seems like a good time to offer this point. As recently as January, and I don't have official statements since then, but I don't believe it's changed too much. As of January, the head guy of the Light Sport Aircraft Office for FAA said, in about 3 years' time, we had 4 fatal accidents involving 8 losses of life.
Mm-hmm.
Each one tragic, of course.
Of course.
But that record is pretty darn good.
That is a pretty good record. And
of course, there have been landing incidents and other stuff,
sure,
too.
Sure.
That happens.
Sure.
But they have not been out of proportion, and this system is working, and we just need people to keep an open mind about it.
And let's keep our fingers crossed and keep up that good record. Dan Johnson, Light Aircraft Manufacturers Association. Thank you for joining us. Very educational, very informative, and we sincerely appreciate it. I'm Jeb Burnside, Editor-in-Chief of Aviation Safety Magazine. We'll be back next month with another edition of Aviation Safety Magazine's monthly podcast. Thank you all for listening. We'll be right back.